Hello and welcome to the Tarlehurst End podcast with your host Mark Mayo. And once again, with football continuing to be shut down, we have endeavoured to bring you an exclusive interview with a former Royal. And this week we welcome Kaspars Gorks to the show, the Latvian central defender who signed for the club in 2011 and then was part of that fabulous title-winning team. We discuss his partnership with Alex Pearson and all the memories from that, as well as his stint in the first team for the start of the Premier League season. Went on loan to Wolves, came back under Nigel Adkins and had another season with the club before being released at the end of his contract. And we began by chatting about exactly what he's up to back in Latvia now he's retired.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Kaspars Gorks, welcome to the Tarlehurst End and welcome to what is, I suppose, a very interesting scenario where we have these, you know, usually I call the, a former player or manager up and we have a chat, but this time we've reached into new technology with Zoom and we're recording it, so hopefully everything goes okay, but hopefully you're also well. How are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm good. And as you mentioned before, I have to get used to new technologies as well. You would think that you never stop learning, and it's definitely the case this time.
First question, I suppose, before we get on to the Reading days and everything, just a general question for fans in England who, you know, probably have lost track of what you've been up to, I suppose, in the last few years. What are you up to these days?
Since I stopped playing, I think couple years ago now, it's probably been the longest 2 years of my life. The previous 20 flew by very fast, actually. But in the last couple of years, I have tried to make my transition from actively playing football, professionally playing football, to sort of a sports football administrative role. If you may, so I've been studying quite hard. I'm actually studying law at the moment as well. And I've been occupying different positions. First, I worked in Latvian FA for a while, and now I'm representing our organization called Latvian Team Sports Association, which basically takes care of all the team sports, representing it in governmental level here in Latvia. So it's quite a busy period. Obviously, most of the industries are at a standstill at the moment, and it affects sports as well a lot. There have been plenty of cancellations, as everyone should know, and my role is to actually actively discuss and negotiate the compensation mechanisms for different team sports to actually these organizations to survive these not easy times.
No, absolutely. And how have you found living? How has Latvia found living in lockdown? Has it been nice and orderly, or has it been a testing time?
I think in general it's been quite orderly. Everyone has been understanding. Obviously, now when the weather is getting better, everyone's getting a bit more fed up with it, with the situation. But I think next couple of weeks, the restrictions will gradually ease down, and I think everything will go back to more or less normal. It will be different, but more normal than it is now. People will be allowed to meet. I think that's probably the toughest test for all of us, that you wouldn't think that you will miss people so much or meeting people so much, but anything else, I think people have been quite understanding of the situation, and there have not been too many problems here in Latvia.
Yeah, before we get on to talking about Reading, then we just started talking just as the German Bundesliga has announced that it's coming back in a couple of weeks. Are you keen to see football return? Are you looking forward to, you know, in the next, whether it's English football or maybe in Latvia, the situation changing for football in the next few weeks?
Listen, I love football to bits, but and obviously it's quite limited what you can watch on TV now. But I think the most important thing that is safe for players, safe for whoever watching football, who's ever following football, I think that's the most important thing. If Germany can supply the everything for football to restart, then it's fine. And I'm welcoming the big football back on the TV, because there's probably going to be some restrictions when we talk about spectators and fans. But I think the most important thing these times is actually to everyone to be safe. And I think you and me and everyone else in UK for sure love football a lot, but the most important thing is not to sacrifice something more, much more important as health or safety for players or for anyone who follows football. I think it's very important for football not to be selfish or greedy at this time and just not start for starting's sake, but actually do it cautiously and in mind that the most important things are somewhere else.
Well, that's the thing as well, isn't it? It feels to me like football fans have been remarkably patient so far, considering the sort of bad reputation we have in a lot of ways. And it's a case of just having that patience extended a little bit longer. Maybe it's a few weeks, maybe it's a couple months or so, or even longer. And then, as you say, when it's right to return, we shall return. And let's
enjoy the atmosphere. Enjoy the atmosphere. That's probably the biggest part of football, to enjoy the atmosphere. And I'm sure that if the football restarts now in May, then this will be the thing that that players miss the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can think of many a times when you had some great atmospheres at Reading. But it's an interesting story that I have heard before about when you joined Reading, in that it almost wasn't Reading that you joined. Supposedly there was a story that you were on the car driving to Southampton to sign there. And how, firstly, is that something that happened? And secondly, how did your move to Reading come about?
Yeah, you're quite right there that I nearly signed actually for a different team at that point, because I think it was the start of the season. And I got promoted with Queen's Park Rangers. But pretty early, I was told that I'm not in plans for next season. So I had to see where my next challenge will lay. At first, I was supposed to sign with Southampton. I even went there and had a chat with my after manager in Reading, Nigel Atkins. Then I went back and my move actually was cancelled to Southampton because of some change of mind or our sport director didn't agree with the Southampton sport director. There's something was going on there. Obviously, as a player, you don't know all the backstage negotiations and dealings. So I went back. I actually sat on the bench in an away game against Everton.
Yeah.
And then I was supposed to go back to Southampton in 2 days' time. And on the way there, I found out that the deal is off, and just took a different junction on the highway, and was informed that Reading are interested, and went there. Did the medical and everything happened very quickly.
Yeah, it's just as well that Reading isn't too far from QPR or Southampton, or that might have been a really long day of driving around the country. And you walked into then, I suppose, you know, with hindsight, both teams were obviously very good, but Reading had just come off of the playoff defeat. There was a lot of sort of uncertainty about player sales and everything, and you come in. And what was your first impression then of walking into that dressing room? Did you think, you know, this is a title winning side that I'm walking into here?
To be honest, at first I didn't think too much about stuff like that. Obviously, you have this ambition that you want to win the championship again, because when you come so close to your realizing your dream to play in Premiership and not actually do it, it's quite a painful experience at that moment. And obviously, my ambition was always to get promoted again. But funnily enough, when I first came to Reading, I never thought that was not my first thought. The one thing that I remember that everyone was very friendly and everyone was very kind to me and welcomed me very warmly. And I can say that I felt welcome at Reading Football Club from the first minute when I came, starting from the medical staff who did my medical to players to everyone at the training ground, and obviously every fan in the stadium. So it's been I couldn't wish for a better reception. But I know that somewhere at the halfway line in a season, I thought that we're not going to challenge for promotion, actually, because we played Forest away, and we won game one, played well. The next game we didn't play so well and lost, and it was all the time up and down. And for me, we lacked the stability that you need to get actually promoted. But then, obviously, you know what happened. There were some crucial, actually, signings made. Some players hit the right form at the right time, and then it just suddenly clicked, you know. And but it actually made sense because, like I said, it Reading Football Club was probably one of the nicest bunch of guys I ever been in a dressing room with. You know, it's the team spirit was incredible there, and when we started winning and we actually started climbing up the table, and then you get a chance to be in a playoff, suddenly you have a chance to get promoted automatically. But because of this closeness in the dressing room, you thought that we fully deserved it, and it actually made sense.
Yeah, because I think it was your first two games were defeats for Reading. And as you say, we get to even to December, usually you think maybe October is when it starts to feel good. But we got about halfway through the season and your first goal came at Ipswich in December. And it was a game when Reading were 2-1 down with 90 minutes gone. And we somehow managed to win 3-2 with two goals in stoppage time. And you know, does that kind of sum up for you what was good about that team, that it never gave up? And that must have come from the dressing room and how, as you say, everyone got on so well.
Yeah. The team spirit was incredible, like I said, all the way from the managers, assistant managers, staff, everyone in the stands. It was incredible. It didn't feel actually like a professional team. It was professional when we talk about training and the way we train, but it really felt like a very, very friendly group of players, which you not come along very often in football teams. Because it was a really, really close atmosphere. I think it maybe comes from because a lot of boys played in academy together, so we had a lot of academy products in our team, and then all the additions that manager made in the winter break as well, they gelled straight in, and it was there, like you mentioned, the Ipswich game. I can remember more games like that. I remember Burnley away when Tubby got knocked out, and then we scored in 90-something, 6th or 7th minute to go on and win the game without really dominating. And then you start winning games just to be, because it gets like a habit. And it was incredible to be on that journey. It was something that it's still emotional even when I think about it like this. I haven't thought about it for a while now, but I know that even now, remembering that, it feels absolutely amazing.
Yeah, one person who was integral to that from your point of view was Alex Pearce, who you formed a brilliant partnership with that season. How did that partnership work for you? As you're on the pitch and you were next to Alex, did you think, okay, he's got certain things, maybe I've got certain things? How did that partnership sort of work for you?
I think central defender is a central defense, actually, is all about partnerships. You can probably pick two best center backs in the world, and then they might not play that well together. But I think with Alex was that he was always ready to learn. He was a good center back as he was, but he was always eager to learn as well. Something I could share my experience with. I could learn from him as well. I think, you know, and that characterized the team, that everyone was ready to do 100% for the team. There was not too many individuals that were standing out, but when you think about the team performances, it was incredible. And Alex had a fantastic season, and I think he was one of the best central defenders that year in the whole league.
It was a testament as well, the fact that yourself, you took the captain's armband actually on occasion that year. And as a new signing, I think that's always quite, you know, it's a bit unlikely really that someone would come in and so soon be named captain for a couple of games. And was that, do you think that was because, you know, did Brian McDermott have a lot of trust in you? Was it because you were vocal in the dressing room? Were you quite a loud figure in amongst the team? Or I was the
oldest one, probably. That's the
most experience.
That might be an issue. Yeah, most experience. I like how you put it. More democratic in the way. But I don't know. Obviously, it's a huge honor to be a captain of any team, and especially if you get chosen by a manager or by your teammates, it's a great privilege, and it's always been. It's not easy for myself to characterize why it has happened or why did it happen, because I have never asked that question to Brian or to any of the teammates, but it's a fantastic feeling. I've been a captain in my national team. I have been a captain in a couple of clubs I've played, and it's always a special feeling. Am I the most vocal one? I don't think that I've ever been the most vocal one. I'm probably quite opposite. I'm the one who maybe tries to actually show with my performances on the pitch or my attitude on a training ground. And that's probably, there are different ways how you can express yourself or express leadership if you like, but I don't think that being vocal is one of my strong points.
Well, one player whose vocalness was certainly one of his strong points was Jason Roberts, and he arrived in January, and almost it felt like a bit of a revolution at the time, and to be in the dressing room as well, that must have been, was it truly as big a shockwave as I kind of have described it there? Was it really that bigger moment when he came into the dressing room? And you know, obviously the on-pitch and the off-pitch both kind of accelerated from then on.
Obviously, Jason has a great personality in general. I think, again, it has a lot to do with the whole team spirit in at Reading at that point, you know, because he fit straight into our dressing room. I think as it happened with me before, everyone welcomed him straight in, and that he delivered and showed with his performances as well. He was a good player. There was no doubt about that. He had a great career behind his back when he joined Reading, and nobody had questions about his ability or quality, but the commitment he showed and on a training ground in the games, it was fantastic, and he scored some crucial goals for us, it was the right fit both for Jason and for football club.
Yeah, certainly had its sort of timing element about it, didn't it? And then Reading, as we got into the spring, and it as you say, it starts looking like playoffs, then it starts looking like automatic promotion. And there were some massive wins in amongst that, with West Ham, Southampton and Brighton, three particular away days. And we'll talk about them individually in a second. But as a defender, I remember those games as games that we were massively under the cosh for and really had our back against the wall for a lot of those games. And for you as a defender, you must have felt, were you just utterly exhausted coming out of those games? Because we've won, but on the same hand, we had to really fight for it, didn't we?
One thing I can say that I never felt tired. I think second part of the season, it never felt like resting or feeling tired. Maybe after the celebrations when we went up, maybe then after that I was a bit tired. But before that, it was actually, I don't know, it was, it's very hard to explain actually the way you feel at that point, but you just wanted to games to come quicker and quicker and quicker. I remember that I put on my fridge the last 10 games of the season, and I looked at the list, and I think by that time we were not in a playoff position yet. But I looked at the list and I thought, Jesus, if we do well in these games, we might as well get automatically promoted as well. And I saw that there's Southampton and there's West Ham and there's Brighton, all these teams actually challenging for promotion as well. And then I remember just taking one by one the games down, and we just won 1-1-1. And I thought, Jesus, shoot, this might happen as well. And I remember that when we beat actually West Ham, then I thought that there's no way that somebody can stop us for getting promoted. Doesn't matter if it will be playoffs or automatically, that this team deserves actually to get promoted.
Yeah, and that West Ham game, it was one that was fitting the narrative, I guess, of being 1-0 down quite early on, having to deal with a lot of pressure, and then it's yourself who pops up with. As we talked, you know, the Ipswich game, as I mentioned earlier, was one where we scored two goals in the end of the game to win. But for the West Ham game, the way that we scored two goals right on the cusp of half-time, having probably not really had many chances before that, what are your memories of, firstly, you know, obviously scoring the goal, and that was a brilliant moment. But secondly, in the dressing room at half-time, having come in and just scored those two goals, what sort of things can a manager say to a team at that sort of moment, other than, brilliant, cool, let's do it again?
I think there was not much that manager can actually say after in a halftime of game like that. I think everyone was on such a high after the halftime, and especially after the full-time whistle as well, because like you rightly said, from the first minute, West Ham were there to try to beat us, because that was their chance. And as well, how the previous game at Madejski went, with all the controversy surrounding Jimmy, they were up for a game. And we were on the back foot for most of the first half. And I actually haven't watched too many goals that I have scored in my careers, or too many highlights, because I leave it that for all days to show to my grandchildren, maybe. But the West Ham goal is probably the one that I have looked over and over again. That is probably one of my favorite occasions that I ever had in my career. I remember that just to score that goal, and where all the Reading fans behind the goal, and I think Noel popped up with the second one, and then Jason celebrating alone, running around the Upton Park. It was it's great memories, and that was the game when I thought that there's no way that someone can stop us now.
Yeah, and that one is I mean, let me put it this way, it's certainly a game that I go back to time and time again to go and watch. And as is the Southampton game that followed it, which turned into a bit of a battle for first place, really. All of a sudden, we found ourselves, you know, competing with the other team in the automatic promotion spot. And that one, the two late Adam Lafondre goals, it was an interesting scenario. What do you think as a defender when you see Lafondre, obviously his substitute heroics were kind of what he became known for? Did you think, you know, with 1-1, 20 minutes to go or something like that, Lafondre comes on the bench, do you think, all right, well, we probably got this now?
I don't know if I thought that we probably got this now, but I think we never had the feeling that we will give up, or that we might not have a chance to win the game. This was the, I guess, Reading at that time, that there was never feeling that there was always feeling that we might win this game, that we should just need to wait for our chance. And maybe it was not always pretty. Maybe it was just one of Hearty's corners or free kicks or whatever, but we always thought that we believed till then that we can actually win the game, and certainly with having a player like Adam in our squad, it's incredible. His goal scoring record and the way he scored plenty of important goals. It was absolutely incredible. He was actually the one that signed. I think we both signed together at similar time, and I think we made our debut together, if I'm not mistaken. But he was a wonderful player for us that year and the years after as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was that famous night against Nottingham Forest, which confirmed the promotion, which it turned out Michele Legitwood was the man who popped up. I wonder if you've ever been a bit envious, if you'd have thought the promotion-winning goal was going to come up from a free kick and a header or a shot off the back of one of those. You might have thought you might have got it yourself, but it was Legitwood that popped up. And what are your memories of, obviously, you know, the sheer ecstasy that sort of unfolded from that moment on?
It was a bit crazy. I couldn't be more happy for Michele to score that goal, because he was one of the probably best players that season and most solid players that season. And he was the one who actually made our life as center backs way more easy, because he did a lot of job for us, protecting us, and I couldn't feel more happier that he got this honor to actually score this historic goal for Reading. And after, we know what happened after. It was absolutely fantastic to have a chance to celebrate with the fans on the pitch, and it's very hard to actually describe that, but it was an absolutely amazing feeling. But once again, it was not probably our best performance or the prettiest game. But if I said that when we played Nottingham Forest away, I remember in halftime thinking that there's probably no chance that we're going to get promoted, and then you actually get promoted against Nottingham Forest, and I could finally shave off that terrible beard I had. That was great.
And then we confirmed, it was a bit of an odd one, because we confirmed the title, you know, with Southampton's defeat after we'd played our game. And there were a few players who stuck around in the Medeski Stadium and watched that game. Where were you when the title was confirmed? Had you gone home? Did you watch it alone? Where were you?
I was not invited to watch together with Jem, unfortunately, but I went home. I went home and watched the game at home with my family. And I remember, I think one of the first things, I think Brian called me as well and congratulated me that we won the league. And it's, again, some great memories.
How was your relationship with Wamedam, actually? How was he as a manager? Did you guys get on pretty particularly well? Was it a relatively professional relationship? Because as a fan, we've always known him as someone who was excellent in terms of man management of players. How did you find that?
I think he was one of the key factors why I actually came to Reading. Because straight away when I did that wrong turn to Southampton, as I could say, straight away meeting Brian, I felt very welcome to the club, and he was always a true gentleman towards me, and he was a key part why the team spirit and team motivation was like it was at Reading Football Club. It's not only Brian. He had a great supporting staff, like I said, with everyone from the medical staff, from Carl, fitness coach, and Gibbo, and everyone was working towards the same goal and always helpful, always trying to help you, trying to achieve the best. You know, when you injure your back 2 days before Southampton game, when you barely can walk, and then you get somehow, I don't know, fixed up for the game, and you end up winning the most important game of the season, you know, through, although two hours before the game you can barely walk. It characterizes probably how everyone contributed to the same goal.
Is that a problem that you were carrying towards the end of the season then?
No, I think I was. I landed awkwardly in the training, and I thought, no way that I'm going to be injured for the most important game of the season. And I remember even on the way to the game, I had all different machines on my back, trying to loosen up or straighten it up or whatever, just to be ready for the game.
Well, that's it was certainly worth it, I suppose, in the end, and that's probably what you remember. And what can you remember after the season and the end of season sort of celebrations that went on? I remember the wolf mask and everything on the pitch after Birmingham, and then we had the trophy lift and the bus parade. What sort of memories stand out for you, and the ones you'd have shared with the teammates as well?
I think those are the extra special moments. I think the most important thing, obviously, is to actually achieve the result and to get promoted. But then it's great to have a chance to celebrate in between your teammates who you trained and played together for most of the year, and when you have a time to celebrate with all the staff members who contributed a lot to this championship title as well, and then obviously you have the chance to actually go on the bus to enjoy this day together with your family, your kids, and most importantly the fans. It's great. It's a big bonus actually to have experienced that. This is this extra closeness you can get to everyone involved during the season, and you can thank everyone, and you can celebrate together with everyone.
Yeah, I've always
Wolf mask actually Jem lost, so I was quite angry about it that he took it away for a bit and then he lost it somewhere. It would have been a great souvenir if I could have kept it.
Yeah, that big bad wolf was the sort of tune, the anthem basically of the team getting promoted. Who was it? Jason Roberts, I believe, behind that, or
I think the song was our in the dressing room way before Jason Roberts. I think it was Jem who actually put the song on first, because if you would say who's vocal in the dressing room, I think Jem would have been the ten times captain. If the most vocal one would be always the captain, but he was the one behind the Big Bad Wolf track. I think it's just got associated with Jason because we start winning the games, and then obviously the dancing. When you win, you dance. When you win, you sing, and the song got more noticed as well, and everyone started to associate it with Jason, and it certainly was the tune of the year at Reading.
And did it feature pretty heavily then? I imagine there must have been a sort of squad party at the end of the season as well.
Oh, of course we had a couple of parties, and it would be a shame not to celebrate a success like that. Success is out there to be celebrated, and the song featured, I can say that song featured for sure. Doesn't matter where we did the celebrations, or it was in Spain or in London or anywhere. The song was always somewhere on the background.
I've always wondered, actually, and one particular teammate, I've always wondered how he would celebrate this sort of thing, is Jimmy Kebbeam, because he's got a bit of a, for the fans, he's got a bit of an enigmatic sort of streak, a bit of a mystery man, but perhaps because we know so little about him, certainly these days. I know that he's playing poker, but that's pretty much it. But what was he like as a teammate?
He has all the attributes to be a good poker player, that's for sure, because it's not easy to read it, Jimmy. But Jimmy actually was one of the kindest guys in the dressing room. He had a short temper, that's for sure, and then he did some crazy stuff time to time. But when it came to delivering on the pitch, then Jimmy was at least that season, he was always there, you know.
Yeah, I suppose. What was the reaction to him? As you mentioned, the West Ham game of the Medeski Stadium earlier, and the controversy towards that. What happened in the dressing room afterwards? When I suppose maybe he was nursing a bit of a wound for having been hacked as a result of it.
I think what Jimmy does that does on the pitch, and what he thinks that he can do on the pitch, and obviously had the ability to deliver something like that. If I would try it, I would just look ridiculous. And I think for him, it was some sort of personal point to prove, and that is his private thing that he wanted to do. And I don't think that the team has to get involved in that. I think if I would try to do it as a centre back, and we would concede a goal, then that would be a problem. But if Jimmy does it on the way far, close to the away goal, then it's fine. He just take care of himself, that he doesn't get injured and can play the next game. It's fine by me. You can discuss if it's ethical or not ethical, or it's good. But like I said, the football game consists of individual battles, and there's very often something said in the heat of a battle, or something done that you want to get the best of your opponent, and certainly Jimmy probably felt that he had to do it, and there's it's I'm sure that Brian probably had a chat with him, and I remember it got mentioned before the West Ham away game, but other than that, I think it was very quickly forgotten, and the most important, as cliche as it sounds, it was the result and the performance in general, because that I remember as a, that was a fun game to play as well.
Sure, it was a fun one, and a memorable one to be in the stands for. And then we move on past that sort of title-winning season and towards the Premier League. And I suppose for you personally, it must have been, you know, you started that season in the team and we were doing relatively well. And for you personally to have made it to the Premier League with what had happened with QPR, where you'd effectively been denied the chance to sort of see it through, having won promotion there, how satisfying was it to get that chance to not only get, you know, into the Premier League, but then to get a solid run of games in the team as well?
It was a dream come true, really. It will sound now that I put everything on my fridge that I want to achieve, but as well, I remember when I first moved to QPR, I stuck a Premier League badge on the fridge and was hoping that one day, obviously QPR at that point were a very ambitious team, and I was hoping that one day I have a chance to actually make a debut, because when I just started out, or even when I was 20, 21 years old, I never thought that I would actually play football professionally, and for me to be so close to realizing my dream. And I remember that will stay for me forever. I don't want to sound too old, not everyone gets so privileged to actually realize their childhood dream. And for me, it was absolutely amazing.
And how did it feel with the, you know, with the team? Obviously, was going to be battling relegation that year. There were a couple of okay results to start off with. Obviously, there's always going to be a bit of a bumpy ride. But how was your confidence in terms of the team's chances of staying up in that first half of the season? Then there were, you know, new players like Pavel Pogrebniak, Adrian Mariapa had arrived. Did you feel like this was a team that was going to be, you know, within a good shout of staying up?
I actually thought yes, for sure. I think the additions we made were suitable for the way Reading played, and as well for a dressing room we had at that time. And I thought we had all the chance to stay up for sure.
What sort of, you know, I suppose in a way it's difficult for you to say how it kind of changed then, isn't it? Because you did in the end you moved out on loan to Wolves during that season. And how did that sort of come about for you? How did you go from effectively being a first teamer to being someone who was were you asked to move out? Was it something that you asked for? How did that come about?
I guess it's specifics of professional sport that the life moves on very quickly, and obviously I couldn't get a game for a longer period of time, and the management made a decision that I could go on loan and try myself to get some playing time under my belt. So for me, it was no hard feelings, because it's a part of your professional career. You always for me, it was important to play the games, and I could get that under at Wolves, and obviously, I was hoping that I will still get the chance to return to Reading and to have some games there again. It's all about proving myself.
Yeah, and you came back, and I suppose this was kind of in the post-McDermott era is kind of what you came back into. Were you surprised that Brian McDermott was sort of moved on in the way he was, and then, you know, to come in under Nigel Adkins? How did you find him as someone, as a reprieve, basically, to getting another chance in the club?
Again, when we talk about the change of a manager, it's part of the game. I guess it's a part of football. Result is the most important thing. Obviously, I was not there at the time, and I didn't know all the details or all the atmosphere around the team when it actually happened. So I couldn't comment you in the detail what was there. But when I returned, Nigel was the manager, and he actually gave me a chance as well to prove myself, to actually have a look at me on the pitch, and I ended up playing quite a few games under him as well.
Yeah, that team was a good team again, and back in the Championship we're talking now, and it very narrowly missed out on the playoffs on the final day. Did that feel like a good team and you know, like again a sort of unified dressing room like the title winning side?
We definitely had a lot of talent in the team. I think the dressing room was a little bit different. The chemistry there was a little bit different as it was in the first season when I was at Reading. So, but when we look at the quality, then obviously Royston was there and Pavel was there, and there were some very good players, but we lacked that bit of stability, and in the end we lost by a very small and painful margin, which was a shame.
Yeah, well, it was one of those seasons, as you mentioned there, a player like Royston Drenthe, I suppose the expectations was always to go back up and everything. And what did you make of, you know, in training day to day with a player like Royston Drenthe, could you see the man that was, you know, the type of player who would get signed by Real Madrid? Could you see the quality that was there in it?
Jesus, every time you had a fight with him, he offered to call somebody from Real Madrid and tell me that he was the best player there as well. So it was not a problem to realize that he played in at Real. But players don't play for Real Madrid without a reason. And he had the talent for sure. But as often as it is, I played with Adel Taarabt at QPR and Royston at Reading. And very often the most talented players are not the most disciplined outside the pitch. So, he was definitely a character. He was definitely a character. And you can see it even now in news, him doing video, rap videos or shooting guns or something like that. So he's still having fun, and that's, I think, very good.
Yeah, I think he's now filming a Dutch crime TV program or something like that, which I suppose is that something something you've ever, is that a post footballing career you've ever considered yourself? Those sort of
myself, of course, no. But like I said, the most important thing is to have fun, I guess, and he's certainly having fun. And no, he was a character that I could, if I would ever write a book, then he would definitely have a place in my book with his antics on and off the pitch.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We'll move on and our final topic of conversation in just a second. But before we do that, your time at Reading ended with obviously your contract expired at the end of that season, and then, you know, you spent a bit of time in England before going and playing abroad a bit. As that contract was coming to an end, did you feel like it was a good time to move on? Did you ask for a new deal? What were you sort of thinking of that time?
I was hoping that I'm going to get a new deal, at least for another year, but it didn't happen. And I faced the harsh reality that it's not that easy to actually stay at the level and play at the level you played before. And so unfortunately, my, you could say, love affair with English football came to an end. I played a bit in at Colchester, but big thank you for them to actually giving me that chance. But unfortunately, yes, the last year at Reading was my last year at Championship. And when I think of it back, then I thought I could have played another maybe couple of years there, and I would really love that, but once again, it's football. It's not always goes the way you're planning. it will go, and all my career actually has been up and down, but I have great memories for my 3.5 years at Reading, and those are the memories that will always stay with me, and I will cherish them.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Playing in a team that, you know, albeit, I suppose that's the fleeting nature of it, isn't it? To be in a team that wins a title at the end of the day, once that season ends, it kind of, you know, the next challenge begins and it's harder, and you know, it's difficult to replicate that. But I suppose to have been part of that title winning team is always, it's the sort of thing you can say, like you could say to QPR, it's the thing that no one can ever take away from you, is it?
I think the journey itself is very interesting. It's not only about the good times, it's the bad times as well. But the journey itself is what I remember, and it's great. I've met some amazing people around along the way. I keep in touch with a lot of them even now, and I couldn't wish for better 3 years of my life or where I spent it, because like I said, I always felt welcome from everyone, and I cannot thank enough people who took care of me that time when I was there. It was one hell of a first season, and then a very interesting second and third.
And is there, as you say, obviously the moments of the sort of West Ham win and the Southampton win and lifting the title are the moments that obviously stick in your mind. But is there kind of one memory that you have that is perhaps a little bit like unknown or a bit more obscure that you think back to as to really sort of sums up your good time at Reading?
It's actually a very good question. It's a very philosophical question. We can probably speak for another 45 minutes about just one question like that. But I don't know. I think that my favorite moment was actually when you feel that you are welcome somewhere. I think that is not winning titles. Not obviously that's important, and I will always remember that season for winning titles, but I just remember that closeness that we had in dressing room, and that banter that we had with players involved that we're not even close to being on the pitch. But it was always this great atmosphere, and from everyone, like I said, I still remember all the medical stuff. For some reason, I wasn't that often injured, but I always I remember the dedication of the medical staff, fitness coach, and everyone at the club. And these are the memories that I will cherish the most.
Well, you're certainly absolutely welcome back anytime you fancy dropping back to Reading. Probably best to wait a few weeks or months before you try and board a flight to come back if you ever fancy it. And I'm sure you strike me as the type of person who might enjoy popping behind the East Stands and having a couple of beers with the fans as well, which might get down quite well. And that brings me to my sort of final question, really, is what is your, you know, how often do you keep tabs on what Reading are doing now? What's sort of your view on where the team is at and where the club is at the moment?
Obviously, I follow the results. I follow the results of Reading on a regular basis. I try to watch some games if I can. Obviously, a lot of things have changed since I was there. Obviously you tend to follow all the players you played together with, some of the players I played against with in different teams, and obviously they have changed a lot the way they want to play and the philosophy they're playing, but I'm not going to be the one who judges the performances or what they, you have to be inside the team to understand what the team is actually trying to achieve and what sort of strategy they have for each and every season. Obviously, as an ambitious club, I understand that they always want to get promoted, but I'm sure that every manager or every player has a vision. And obviously, after me came Dennis as well to Reading, so I could follow a bit more closely because he was telling me what's going on at the club when we met for Latvian national team. I think the most important thing is to understand for a club itself what they want to achieve, and then the fans get behind the team and then try to replicate what we managed to do all those years ago. There's no one formula, especially in the championship, how to win it, you know. And you probably know yourself from watching a lot of games in the championship that not always the best quality on the pitch or wins the titles, but you have to try to achieve similar probably chemistry that we achieved in that year when we got promoted, and then see. I think a big part for Reading has always been academy, and this is well probably how most of the talent has to go through, because this was the case when I moved to Reading. We had a lot of academy graduates who naturally had the upbringing and the values that they try to show on the pitch, and I think that was something that stick to other players as well. And if you add the right characters from other teams, that's how the teams are made.
Well, absolutely. I'm not sure I would always recommend, as you say, many formulas to getting promoted. I'm not sure I'd always recommend being under the cosh for 89 minutes and then stealing the wins, but it was one hell of a journey watching it unfold and managing to pull it off that way. So thank you hugely, Caspers, for obviously your time at the club and your effort levels for that, but also for coming on the Tile Stand and reminiscing about it all this afternoon.
It was a fantastic walk down the memory lane for myself as well, because not every day too you get a chance to actually remember all these things. And I keep in touch with a lot of the players I played with, but it was certainly very nice for myself as well. And I can always only say a massive thank you again, once again, for everyone who supported me at Madejski, at away games. And like I said, this memory of scoring a goal against West Ham when you have all your fans behind the goal going crazy, this is something that gets me goosebumps even thinking about it. So it was absolutely a fantastic time.
Yeah, we'll be joining you and watching that on YouTube for years to come. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks, let's hope that we can see each other somewhere at Madejski soon enough, but safe enough that everyone who watches the game and follows the game is most importantly safe. I remember that actually at the end of that season there was a Latvian band recording an album near Reading, and we went into the recording studio and the producer, he just looked at me, and he was a Reading fan, so it was a great coincidence that he was a Reading fan. So I ended up spending a lot of time, not at home, but in a recording studio, listening to all sorts of music and preparing for the games, I guess, for the most deciding games of the season. But it just shows what football means to people in England, and I can only realize. I cannot even realize what it means to actually not having a chance to go to the games. But like I said, football will be back sooner or later, but it will be back. And I hope that everyone is safe at this challenging time for every one of us.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.